Welcome, everybody. This is the November 15th, 2012 Edgewalker teleconference, and our topic tonight is prophecy. And before we get started, we're going to do a quick check-in with those who are on the call. So please say your name, where you're calling from, and anything you'd like to say about your connection to Edgewalkers.
Hi, this is Manuel calling from San Juan, Puerto Rico. This is my first time in the call, and this is the first time I talked to Judy. I've been recently introduced to the work, so I'm enjoying walking on the edge.
Well, you send your emails, isn't it? So, great. Manuel, great to have you with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm Diane Williams. I'm from Fayetteville, Arkansas, and I saw the movie with Ed today, Cloud Atlas, and it seemed like a movie for Edgewalkers.
Yeah, I would agree with that. What was it about that movie that felt like Edgewalkers to you?
It was about people, you know how hard it is to describe what it's about since you've seen it, but it's about people striving and struggling with change in their lives. And, oh my gosh, Ed, help me out here. It was about...
Everyone is interconnected.
Yeah. Everybody's connected, and what we do, touches other people. And what I really loved was how they use so many different stories and intertwine them, and each one of the stories involves someone who has probably been downtrodden. Or had difficulty, such as a black slave, two guys that were gay, some Chinese factory workers, senior citizens, the way they were treated. It was just like they took all of these stories from people that had been, somehow put down, and how they could pull themselves up, and heaven is opening. We just have to choose the door and walk through.
Thank you so much for that. I strongly encourage people to go see that movie. It's definitely about walking between worlds and between times.
Mm-hmm.
And it's mind-bending and powerful. I had to see it twice.
Yeah. You did, or you will?
We did.
Oh.
It's even better the second time.
Yeah, I'd like to see it again.
Yeah, I definitely think you should do that. All right, thank you. Someone else want to check in?
Hey, my name's Ed Williams. I'm also from Fayetteville, and I feel I'm also an edgewalker. And something I came across this afternoon was an old Sioux proverb that said, "Do not only point out the way, but lead the way." And I think that's exactly what Edgewalkers do.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, it takes courage to do that, but the time is now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, Ed. Mary?
Hi, I'm Mary. Mary McDonald, calling from north of Boston. And my social enterprise is called MaryMacMissions.com. And after a journey with my mom through one of these terrible degenerative brain illnesses, I felt the fire in my belly and heart to do something for the families that are dealing with these degenerative illnesses that are rising like nobody's business, and really providing more psychosocial, spiritual support to individuals, couples, and families who are now faced with these not only degenerative illnesses, but also the rise of autism, the rise of cancer in our society are just unconscionable and really a situation of crisis. And I find myself as a prophet, in the role of a prophet, in my church, in my social situation, speaking about, with passion about these topics, and many people around me just looking at me like I have five heads, and many people still in denial about the situation. Many people don't want to hear what I have to share with them, and really looking forward to tonight's call about the prophetic voice and how do we share our prophetic voice in a way that's gentle, in a way that can be heard by the people around us.
It's a beautiful posing of the question, Mary. Thank you so much. Mary, could you also say something about the role of spirituality for you in all of this? Because that's something I think is important for people to hear.
Well, I'm a Roman Catholic. I have an upbringing. I'm a cradle Catholic. And I think, really being from the Irish Catholic tradition, having really been just led to a Catholic Mass every Sunday of my life by parents, and then being threatened in my college years, if you don't go to Mass, we're not going to fund your university education. It's the sense of social justice, really, that I've taken away from this tradition. And even now, I'm a part of one of the most liberal Catholic communities here north of Boston that is a very social justice-oriented community. And it's just, this is the core of what calls me to this work. And I've also become a certified yoga teacher at Kripalu in the Berkshires. So walking not only the Catholic tradition, but also now the Eastern tradition of the Hindu practices, and really practicing both the East and the Western practices, which bring light not only to my personal world and healing, personal healing journey from the experience that I had, but also I'm now a teacher to other long-term caregivers who may not have been taught how to breathe or how to meditate, and I'm trying to bring these breathing and meditation practices to people in ways that are not couched in a religious language, so that people can be more free to experience and experiment with how to breathe, how to meditate in ways that may not be limited by a religious framework or biases.
Yeah, wonderful. It's so much a part of an edgewalker role to integrate what seems to be different worldviews or paradigms or approaches to things, and you've just given us a wonderful example of that kind of integration. Thank you.
Thank you.
There may be a couple of other people who will join the call, and we'll include them once they do. I'm waiting for someone actually to come over to my house that will join the call, and my husband as well. But this is our merry little band at this point. And I'd like to, one of the things we do at the start of these calls is inspirational reading. and then a moment of silence. So I'd like to do that now and read you something from the Hopi elders that I think fits with what a lot of you are saying. You have been telling the people that this is the 11th hour. Now you must go back and tell the people that this is the hour, and there are things to be considered. Where are you living? What are you doing? What are your relationships? Are you in right relation? Where is your water? Know your garden. It is time to speak your truth. Create your community. Be good to each other. And do not look outside yourself for the leader. Then the elder clasped his hands together and smiled and said, "This could be a good time. There is a river flowing now very fast. It is so great and swift that there are those who will be afraid. They will try to hold on to the shore. They will feel they are being torn apart and will suffer greatly. Know the river has its destination. The elders say we must let go of the shore, push off into the middle of the river, keep our eyes open and our heads above the water. And I say, see who is there with you and celebrate. At this time in history, we are to take nothing personally, least of all ourselves. For the moment that we do, our spiritual growth and journey comes to a halt. The time of the lone wolf is over. Gather yourselves. Banish the world's struggle from your attitude and your vocabulary. All that we do now must be done in a sacred manner and in celebration. We are the ones we have been waiting for." Please join me in a moment of silence. Thank you. We are the ones we've been waiting for. I think that's with what somebody just said about leadership and how important it is now for us to take leadership and to be the prophetic voice. So the first question that I'd like to throw out for us to explore is the question of what is prophecy and what do we mean by prophetic voice? And I want to share that recently I was a speaker at the National Dominican Sisters Conference. This was all the Dominican sisters across the United States sending representatives from their congregations to come and be together and to give one another courage and to help get clarity about their collective mission. And one of the other speakers at the conference talked about the role of prophecy in the Catholic Church. And Mary, this probably wouldn't surprise you, but it was actually very surprising to me, and it was after I had chosen this topic, that the prophecy literally means to speak the truth. It's not about foretelling the future. It's about speaking the powerful truth to those in power now to be able to change the system. And so I have been thinking of prophecy. I'm just fascinated myself with the future and how we can know the future. And I think more abilities and insights and skills and gifts to know the future than is commonly assumed. So when I first chose this topic, that was what I was thinking. But I want to throw out that there is this alternate definition, which means to speak the truth, which in many ways can create a different future. So I want to throw that out and see what you think about that and what your own ideas are about what is prophecy.
Well, in the silence, Judy, it says Mary, I would just say I've never thought of myself as a prophet, and I almost feel it is a proud title to even consider oneself as a prophet. But when you say that to speak the truth is the role of the prophet, it brings it much down to a more humble stature, and it becomes a much more comfortable title.
You could own it now.
Associate myself with.
Yeah. So, and you had actually talked about, and particularly in the social activism that you're doing, that you feel called to be a prophetic voice. Is that different for you than being a prophet?
A little bit of the ostracism that we read about in history books of the prophets of the past, when I'm just speaking the truth. I'm just speaking what's written about in academic literature. I'm just talking about the rates of these increases in these diseases in my church or in some of my, you know, I'm in these little management small business groups. I mean, even if I'm just in these little groups talking about these diseases, I just feel like people are just in so much denial about it, and their ears, they don't want to open their ears to it because it is so scary.
And so one of your questions was, how can I speak my truth in a gentle way that people can hear?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you. Anyone want to either comment on what Mary's just said or on, just on your own view of prophecy and how you personally relate to the word of prophecy or prophetic voice or being a prophet? And I know, Manuel, our mutual friend Carlos Acevedo has shared with me that you've done shamanic studies, and edgewalkers are very much the shamans of our time. They're the ones who walk between worlds and see things that others can't see, the way Mary's talking about with the diseases, for instance, and who bring back information from the spiritual world or the invisible world to the tribe or the community or the collective humanity. So I wonder, Manuel, if you have anything you would want to add right here.
Well, yeah, I think when I think of prophecy in the old sense, we tend to put the prophet, so to speak, in such a high place, so elevated, that we tend to put ourselves out of reach to that. But when we share this definition that you shared tonight, speaking the truth, then that's very, very empowering. It's quite a dramatic shift. And then we all have the gift of prophecy or the opportunity. So very, very powerful. Thank you for sharing that definition. I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, it was quite mind-opening for me. And in terms of what I read from the Hopi elders, who would also be shamans, you know, that they're very much saying now is the time you need to speak your truth. In fact, that there's literally the words, it is time to speak your truth, create your community, be good to each other, and do not look outside yourself for the leader. I mean, that's like the prophetic code. Yeah. Thank you. Anything else, Manuel, that you want to say right at this point?
No, not for the moment. Thank you.
Okay. Ed and Diane, feel free to jump in here.
Yeah, I was thinking, this is Diane, not Ed. I was thinking again about the movie, how they would say, this is the truth, truth.
Yeah.
You remember that? So it was like, it's almost like saying the real truth. This is it. This is the kernel we've been looking for and waiting for. And so I hadn't connected truth with prophecy that much before, but I can see that when we really get into our deep space, deep into our soul, and we really ask for the truth, when we seek it through our deep meditations, we will get the truth, and that is why we are the prophets. It's almost hard to say it, but we are the prophets, and we do have this commission to bear the truth and to carry it forward no matter what.
Mm.
No matter what. And that really shakes me to my toes. It's also very exciting to me.
Well, because you have to step into your power.
Yes.
And the truth gives you power.
Yes, and that's always been a little difficult for me to do that.
In the movie, when you talk about, you know, there'll be a time when someone says, do you want the true truth? Or the true true, I don't remember what words they were actually saying, but they would say true truth or true true. All the time that question was asked was in the midst of a crisis, both a physical crisis where there was danger, but also a crisis of reality where you were called, if they were going to go on in their journey, whatever it was, they were going to have to see the world differently.
Right, right.
And so it takes great courage to face the truth. And Mary, that's what you were talking about, is the truth, the way you're telling it now, does seem to really scare people. It scares you because it is a scary truth. Something is going on that creates more diseases in people and, you know, more death, more suffering, all of the things associated with that. And yet if we don't face the truth of whatever that is, we'll never be able to solve the problem. Staying in denial doesn't solve the problem, so we need our prophets.
You know, just to tag along on what Diane was saying, you know, this is it.
Uh-huh.
The movie is the movie that we saw today was really, really incredible, and that it brought to light, you know, just how we are all edgewalkers, and how we have a choice. To go along with the status quo, or to break with that, make our own choice, stand in our own truth, and make a complete shift, and change the outcome of what is one of the potentialities of staying in that status quo. But that's what really struck me so much, you know, was the fact that they brought everything back, I guess, back to the past. And I don't want to ruin any of the movie for anybody who hasn't seen it. But they made that choice, the couple made that choice to break from the status quo and stand in their own truth, saying, I'm not going to do this. This is not right. So I'm just going to walk away. And to me, that's truly what an edgewalker is standing in your truth and blazing a new trail
mm-hmm.
for other people to eventually follow.
Now, have you ever, I know this for a fact, but would you be willing to share something in your own life where you made that kind of choice and a turnabout from the status quo, the traditional path?
Several
you don't
examples
have to. I'm just an invitation. You don't have to.
Yeah, no, I don't have a problem with it. I'm just trying to decide which one. I think yeah. I've done that several times in my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one was when I decided to end my marriage 20-some years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was just staying in that marriage knowing that that's what was expected of me. You know?
That was the status quo.
Everybody was miserable, so I decided just to say, no, this is not good. It's not good for me. It's not good for her. It's not good for the kids. It's just better to start over again. You know, I need to live to my truth and not be living a lie.
Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of nuances that went along with that that doesn't need to be gotten into. But, you know, I needed to stand up for myself. And I've done that in the military, during my military career. I had to do the same thing again in the last church that I served in. You know, so for me, it's an evolving process of standing in my truth and saying, this is what I believe. This is what I know to be true.
And you point to something very important, that it doesn't necessarily happen only once and then your life gets easy.
No. It hasn't so far. Well, an analogy, I guess, is like a spiral staircase.
Yeah.
You kind of come back to the same thing, but you're not at the same level anymore. You're a little bit higher.
Mm-hmm.
And you may continue on your journey in life, and it may circle back to the similar instance, but again, you're not at the same level as you were before, because you've learned from the previous, hopefully have learned from the previous experience. And you're able and stronger to stand in your truth.
And often the challenges get tougher. Either the system's bigger or the crisis or challenge is one that's more of a polarized or difficult situation. So I think of it kind of like you graduate from fifth grade and then you get sixth grade tests. And you graduate from sixth grade and then you get seventh grade tests. And so it doesn't necessarily get easier, but we learn more of who we are. And we get used to believing we might actually pass tests.
It's like learning to swim. You know, you swim in it. You start in the shallow end where you can stand on the bottom.
Yeah.
And as you go through the process of learning to swim, you one day realize that, hey, you're not standing on the bottom anymore. You're
swimming
actually,
under your own power. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. You know, you're making me think about another thing that I've learned about prophecy. And that was when I applied for the job at the University of Arkansas 4 years ago, right about now, right about this week, was when I sent my resume in. And I did it only because a friend said he thought I was right for the job, and I knew I didn't want to take it, and I didn't want to move to Arkansas, and I didn't want to disrupt my life, and I just did it to get him off my back. But as I read the job description, there was something that really stirred in me. It was like, wow, this is my dream job. But no, I'm not moving to Arkansas. And it just made up my mind. I absolutely was not doing that. But I would appease him by going through the motions of sending my resume, which would only take me 3 minutes to write an email and attach the resume to the email. Simple stuff. And then I get a call to come for an interview, and they sound really, really interested. And I just go into the scared place of like, oh, no, what have I started? This is not what I want. I don't want to do this. And I called up a friend that I knew something about the job. And I said, you know, would you please tell me more about this? And he said, you are really the right person for the job, and I want you to go on this interview, and I'll be a reference for you. And, you know, you've got, these are some things to look out for. And I went, but David, I don't want to go. This is not, you know, the job sounds perfect, but I just don't want to disrupt my life this way. And I said, I encourage you to go look through the Old Testament and read through the prophets. He said, every single one of the prophets who was called by God, except for two, went kicking and screaming.
Yeah.
So that actually pushed me over into an openness, because I could really feel the divine wisdom of those words, that I really felt like I was being called, but I didn't want to go. And so I felt at least that I was in some good company. And it gave me, you know, it pushed me over to being more open about the job, which now I love, and I'm so happy to have followed that path. But I'm just curious if anyone else has had this experience of feeling the prophetic call or being called a truth or a prophecy where you didn't want to do it. You went kicking and screaming, and yet somehow you did it anyway. I'd love to hear those stories.
Well, I can share an instance of something that happened last week. I was invited to speak in front of an audience, a group of people that are already seeking transformation. So it's like a community that's already established. And this is Manuel, by the way. And I remember feeling like that kicking and screaming that whole day, because it was going to be in the evening. I was totally reluctant. I could feel self-sabotage going on inside. All kinds of limiting beliefs kept popping up, and I was like, okay, I had the, in my BlackBerry, I had the alarm set up. So it's like, okay, 7 hours to go, 6 hours to go, 5 hours to go. I was like ready to launch. I couldn't wait to just show up. To me, my biggest challenge was to show up on time against all the funk that I was experiencing inside. And then the moment that I got there and, you know, it was time to turn the switch on, it was awesome. It was transformative for me. It was quite magical. I let go of everything, and it was all about connecting with this community that I had never met these people, but I knew that they were seeking that which I am seeking, which is the truth, which is embracing change. So I jumped into the fire, so to speak, and it went very well, and I got some very positive feedback, as a matter of fact.
So what was it that helped you make that switch? That's a fascinating moment of, you know, you said, I think, like, when I stepped on, or what happened at that moment? Is there anything that you could pull from that would be useful to other people?
Well, there were several stretches, actually. This was on the Wednesday at 7 p.m. that I was presenting, and Monday at 7 p.m., I learned that these training modules the group is used to having music in the process. as part of like an exercise. So they would go into couples or triads or dyads and exchange feedback or give feedback and support, and there'd be background music. So I had never spoken, so I didn't know it about this. And I learned that they don't use CD players. I learned that they use, you know, iPod. So I have like zero knowledge on Monday night of how to record or download music from the internet. So I had to go from 0 to 60 in 48 hours. So to me, that was the first stretch. Like going into my community and asking for help over the phone. Hey, can you coach me how to do it? How do I download music into my phone, and then what music to pick? And I realized that, I mean, for a moment, I felt so alone in the world and so old-fashioned at the same time, because I had been resisting, you know, the technology. And suddenly it's expected of me to not only have it, but use it. And it's a feature in my phone I didn't even know existed.
Wow.
It's a new phone, but I didn't even know I had it. So it was like all this newness and all this trust and all this, you know, who do I call? Who can help me? Who can support me? And fortunately, I have some young cousins who are like computer geeks. And immediately it was like super fast that they helped me over the phone. And once I downloaded this music and I knew how to make it all fit into what I was going to talk about, which had to do with embracing change and transformation and living with passion, everything just like fell into place. So to look back and say, wow, you know, I pulled that part off, that was very empowering, because to me that was a huge mountain to climb in very little time.
Yeah, and you were kicking and screaming against the technology and then transformed the technology into your friend.
Exactly. And make it the cornerstone of my 2-hour talk, or processing. Yeah.
And now it's a gift going forward, because you can incorporate that in other things you do as well.
Exactly. Well, actually, this talk that I gave was actually like a job interview, so to speak. It was a performance where I was being observed by peers who would give me a thumbs up or thumbs down to be a speaker or a trainer in this community. So I got the thumbs up and the invitation. So now I'm at that point of contemplating, you know, the commitment part, you know, signing a contract and going through the training process. So there was a lot at stake. I mean, it was one of those things where you have nothing to lose and everything to gain. And it's one of those things where I could choose to put pressure on myself or not. And so I chose not to do that. I actually chose to be free. I mean, after all, I stepped into that. I was the one that knocked on their door saying, you know, what are you guys about and how can I grow with you? So I was in creation mode. I was really in exploring and creating. So that helped me put those that kicking and screaming into perspective. Or what I call the little gremlins. That helped me put the little gremlins in perspective.
Well, one of the things that you're pointing to for me, and I don't know whether this is actually your experience, but you know, we were talking about prophets speaking the truth, but your experience sounds to me like it's also being your own truth, that it's not just about the words, it's about being your authentic self and, you know, putting yourself in situations where you might be more fully utilized, but you're not trying to sell anybody on anything or change them in any kind of way to be different from what they are. It's like everybody gets to be authentic.
Yeah, definitely. Standing in my authenticity and finding that common ground with everyone. Mm-hmm. I wasn't selling or promoting. It was just sharing my truth in a way that I can connect with others and empower others to find our common ground. So that part was not only easy, but it was also empowering. It was giving more energy to me and to the group to connect with it that way.
Beautiful story. Thank you.
Thanks.
Does anyone else want to share a story? Is that Mary?
I'll share the story about this first call to be a healer for other caregivers. I was experiencing post-traumatic stress disorder after my own journey with my mom, this brain disease. And towards the end of the... or what I call the end of my 12 months with PTSD, I just witnessed, you know, my breath and my heart center and this real strong kind of fire in my heart. Very similar, I saw to these street side images of when you see the man with the pickup on the Southwest highway with the sprayed religious portraits of Jesus or Mary, and it was like Jesus with the burning heart. And it is so ubiquitous in the Catholic religious markets. And I felt that burning heart in me. And then I said, oh, my God, I don't know how I can be strong enough to go and be a resource for these other caregivers. These stories are so devastating. It's so sad to witness a loved one with one of these degenerative brain illnesses losing life on a biweekly, monthly basis. And how can I commit my life to this? I just don't know if I can possibly do this. And I came up with this vision for a talisman that would have a courageous lion on the front of it and a lamb on the inside of it. And the talisman would protect me as I go back into the caregiver groups and allow me to listen to the stories and be a resource. So I actually commissioned an artist in New Hampshire to help me create this talisman that then I now wear when I do my work with the caregivers. And, you know, I don't see it as having any particular metaphysical powers, but it represents a wonderful story that I can share with the caregivers, that each one of us is a courageous lion and an advocate for the loved one that we're caring for. But in the inside, we're also a wounded, sacrificial lamb having to sacrifice so much of our own self to empower or protect the other person. And it's now a symbol of balance that I can use as a story and metaphor for the groups that I'm now working with. And I think it provides a validation for the people that I'm working with, as well as a validation for my own story in the past, but also in the present, that we all need to be active and defending social justice on some level, but we all also need to rest and find nurturing in our lives that restores us. So I think that's one of the turning points for me that I can share.
Yeah, what a beautiful image and metaphor. That's just so powerful. And one of the signs of spiritual maturity that I read about is being able to hold the paradox of opposites and to live in the tension of that. And your description really is a beautiful example of that, that we're both the lion and the lamb.
Right, right. Thank you.
And I want to come back for the group with the question, Mary, that you posed in the beginning, just to see what kinds of comments people might have. So the generic question is, when you have a truth to speak, you are a prophet, you have a prophecy of something that you see that needs addressing in the world, what have you found as the most effective ways to communicate that, to use Mary's words, to do that in a gentle way that people can hear? Because so much of the things that we need to prophesy about these days, whether it's war or the economy or the illness or the environmental change or the greed of capitalism, I mean, there's just so many things that any one of us might feel called to take a stand for. What is the best way that you know of to be heard?
Well, this is Diane, and I think for the most part, for me, it's a softer, gentler way of being one-on-one with people. That seems to work well with me through the spiritual counseling that I do. And it's very non-threatening for the person who is with me. And I mean for it to be non-threatening for them to help heal that which is so debilitating for them. But I could see perhaps one day having to take my voice and make it bigger. I'm not exactly sure how that would be, but I did notice in this presidential election, I wasn't out on a street corner, that's for sure, but I certainly was getting some vibes that there were things that there was so much going on, and it seemed like there were no sane voices. And maybe someday I'll have the courage to speak a truth about some larger issue and not necessarily be loud, but be able to vocalize it in a way that people could hear, or it might make a difference. So it may be that I'm going from the softer mode to a little more forcefulness.
Or from the individual mode to something, to a larger audience.
Yes. Exactly.
Or both.
Yes, that's true. It could be both.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're definitely feeling something calling you. It's just not clear what it is you would speak yet, but you have a feeling you will be.
I think so. I think there are so many things that come to me, and I get passionate about it. And, you know, we always talk about finding your passion.
Mm-hmm.
And someday I can't decide which one it is.
I wonder if you're a 7 on the Enneagram.
Well, there may be some changes on my Enneagram coming. But I think it's so funny because some people don't have a passion or can't find it, and I have so many. Oh, anyway.
Yeah, very full plate. So a greater need to focus on a smaller number of passions.
Right,
exactly. Would help you to have a bigger voice.
Yes.
Yeah. And I know in my own work, one of the things that, I'm not somebody that, wait a minute, let's back up because that's not true. Let's see. What I want to say is that I don't try to change the prevailing paradigm or the prevailing power sources or the mainstream. In my own work, I want to speak to people who resonate already with the messages. I guess it's like I'm not trying to convert or proselytize. I just want to find the people who see the world like I do and build connection and community, because mm-hmm. I think that's a way of creating critical mass for the voice.
Mm-hmm.
So not having to speak louder or more powerfully, but rather to have greater numbers of people have the courage to share their the message that's similar to mine,
mm-hmm.
if we give each other courage. That's really been my strategy. And it's not the only strategy that works, but I think that's, you know, the way I try to build an Edgewalker community or connections through the Tyson Center for Faith and Spirituality in the workplace. I just want to try to legitimize conversations around the value of faith or spirituality in the mainstream. But I don't necessarily knock on the CEO's door of IBM in order to do that. I try to find the people who already resonate with the message.
I think that, Judy, is the ideal way. I do. And yet there are just times that I would just love to just let that passion go. there is something about, if you all watched President Obama in his first, debate, and he didn't do too well. And then after being reelected, he seems to be finding a stronger voice. And I think he's doing it, I think, slowly, but it seems like that maybe he's doing some of that, where he's taking his softer message and maybe, I don't know. Does anyone else see that in him? I'm just kind of hesitant about saying that, but I feel like he's gaining his own self-confidence in the areas where he needs to.
You know, this is Judy, and I would say I see that, but for me the more important question would be, where are you gaining confidence in and strength in your own message, and what's the evidence for that?
Mm-hmm.
And he's probably an inspiration to you.
Yeah.
But
in what
ways are you doing that?
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to answer now, but it's something to be looking for.
Yeah.
I could give you an example. I think you just spoke at the Wisdom at Work conference on spiritual intelligence. And mm-hmm. that was your first time doing something like that. I think that takes courage to talk about something.
Yes, it did. It did, actually. Yes. Thank you for reminding me.
Yeah.
So, it's about taking risks. Edgewalkers always take risks.
They do. Calculated risks, not crazy risks.
Right. Exactly.
I'm noticing that it's now the top of the hour, and so I do want to bring this call to a close. So I'd like to invite each of you, if you have anything that you'd like to say in closing, and that could be an unanswered question that we'll leave unanswered, but something to chew on, or something you got out of this call, or whatever you'd like to share.
Judy, this is Mary. I think to answer my own question that I posed at the beginning, how to be speaking the truth in a gentle way, is exactly what you have mentioned. It's to find the similarity in the message of the other and find the middle and meet there. And that way there's a care and there's a portion of the heart that is shared by yourself and the other. And that way the ears can be more open if you're able to meet in the middle and hear on a topic that both people care about.
Oh, beautifully said. I had the image as you spoke of something I used to do when I was advising students at the university. And before the student came in, I would meditate on my heart. And when the student was in front of me, I would, with sort of spiritual eyes, see their heart, and I would see light going between our hearts and connecting, and you use the word connecting. And it was out of that imagery or actual energy experience, depending on your own belief system. For me, it really feels like an energy exchange. From that intentional experience, I would find myself knowing and saying things to the student, particularly the kinds of questions I would ask would sometimes seem almost irrational or left field, but it almost felt like someone was behind me over my shoulder saying, ask them this, because there was this heart connection going on. And so when you spoke of the connection and the middle ground and that kind of thing, that it brought me back to that experience. Thank you for that.
Sure.
Anyone else have closing comments?
This is Manuel.
Yes.
I think for me, listening to everyone, and thank you, everyone, for sharing your anecdotes and sharing from the heart. I think for me, the most... what I take from this dialogue and what's most empowering is that although I may have multiple passions, and sometimes I have a dilemma of what passion to choose from moment to moment, I think that the most grounding or centering and rewarding piece is that I'm speaking my truth. And so as long as I'm speaking my truth, then I'm not going to bend to the circumstances and by my environment or the challenges that are on the path, and that I can stay true to my purpose and fulfill my destiny here and my work, which is unfolding as I speak. So,
yeah, it's pretty exciting. You'll have to let us know what happens next.
Yeah, you
use the word courage and you know, I just used that heart imagery, and when you used the word courage, it reminded me of the word courage comes from the French word le coeur, which means the heart. And so to have courage to speak one's truth actually means to be in your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like following your heart's desire, your heart's guidance.
There's definitely a difference. There's definitely a definite distinction when I'm speaking from my head or an agenda from my head versus when I'm speaking with my heart. So I'm finding that distinction to be very powerful. As long as I'm speaking from my heart, it's a lot easier to have that soft voice, that compassionate voice, And at the same time, it's unwavering. I'm not going to sell out.
And I would hypothesize that when we speak from our hearts, that people are better able to listen with their hearts. It's just a hypothesis. I don't know that to be true. But...
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Thanks, Manuel.
Thank you.
Ed or Diane, anything in closing?
Well, I just came across this quote from Gandhi that I'd like to share that I think sums it up pretty much for me. It reads, "Many people want to punish you for speaking the truth, for being correct, for being you. Never apologize for being correct or for being years ahead of your time. If you're right and you know it, speak your mind, even if you are a minority of one. The truth is still the truth."
Ooh. Will you send that to me? I'm going to post my opening quote, and I'd love to post that also on the website. That's powerful.
Yeah, you know, I was just putzing around on my iPad, and this popped up. I go, boy, that's exactly what we've been talking about.
Your iPad is being prophetic.
I will send it to you.
Thank you very much. That is a perfect closing quote for tonight. But Diane, I want to give you a chance if you have anything you want to say in closing.
All I wanted to say really is that the opening quote, really, I love that. And you just said you're going to post it. And
yeah.
The one that Ed just found, isn't that remarkable? I love it. I love the way these things come together. I love it. Thank you for the call, Judy.
My great pleasure. Yeah. So I guess what I would say in closing is, my dog has got something to say in closing. that community is the place that gives us courage, and that when we think we're the only ones, then we think we're crazy. And the main reason I do this work is because I did have that experience of feeling so alone and crazy, and it was horrendous. And yet still inside of me was this inner knowing that there was something I had to say and something I had to do despite feeling alone and crazy. And that as I began to find other crazy fellow journeyers, it got a whole lot easier. And so my invitation to you is, wherever you can, speak your truth, and the fellow journeyers will find you. If you don't speak your truth, nobody really knows who you really are. But as you move towards greater and greater authenticity and greater courage, you're actually like a strange attractor or a magnet. More and more incredible people will find you. That's just been my experience. And It's an amazing way to live. I never would have believed it 15 or 20 years ago. And I'm pretty sure that each of you is finding the same kind of thing to be true. So continue to have courage, continue to reach out to others, and continue to speak your truth. And our next call will be in January. I haven't selected the date or the topic. And so if anyone has any suggestions, just let me know. I'm always open. Thanks so much for being with us tonight. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Judy. Thank you, Judy.
Thank you, Judy.
Okay. Good night.
Good night. Good night.